Hello, you're listening to Sean from Galactic Chat, and today I'm interviewing Australian debut novelist Claire Corbett. Welcome to the podcast, Claire.
Thank you very much, Sean.
Now, your novel, When We Have Wings, was released in mid-2011. You're a debut novelist, but have had short fiction and non-fiction essays published in a range of publications, including Rolling Stone. What, if anything, has been different about having a book published?
Oh, it's hugely different. It's such a much bigger piece of work, and it brings attention to you as a writer, whereas when you're publishing individual pieces, I think the attention's more on the piece. The novel is so much the kind of product of you as a writer, you know. There's no comparison. It's like the difference between writing a school essay and doing your PhD, And I think we all know that as writers, you know, the novel is your big claim to being a writer.
And so far you're enjoying the process?
Yes. When I started writing this book, which was actually quite a long time ago, you know, the landscape was totally different. So I had, you know, there was nothing in my, everything has changed, you know, with Twitter and Facebook, all the kind of social media presence that an author is expected to have now. And I was really worried about that because I'd always thought of myself as being a fairly typical reclusive author. You know, I wanted to put my words out there and not particularly myself. So I think that's really different. And what changed for me around issues of social media is that I realized that I'm a writer because I want to communicate with people. And then I realized that I'm actually really enjoying communicating with people and that I can do that in lots of different ways.
Do you have management strategies for getting around being distracted by the internet and by Twitter?
You are so right that that's necessary, and I'd say I'm still learning to manage that. I think it's really quite difficult, especially when there's just so many other things to manage. I think most writers would probably say that's the biggest problem with social media is that it's this never-ending stream. And I think, you know, Twitter's probably particularly bad that way. It's the most interesting and therefore the most difficult to control.
Yes, I experienced the same myself, and I haven't written a novel yet, so... you reside in the Blue Mountains but grew up in the city. When We Have Wings it depicts both settings. What perspective has living rurally or regionally given you as a writer?
Actually, it's interesting you should say that. You know, I think my perspective actually came more from working in government. I worked in a sort of tall, shiny tower in the heart of Sydney, you know, and it was the absolute epicenter of power in New South Wales. You know, all the big law firms were around us. We were literally at the top of the tower advising the Premier, and yet we constantly, you know, with the portfolios, like one of the portfolios I had was water, and it was very much around regional water. I wasn't dealing with Sydney water. I was dealing with Murray-Darling Basin Commission issues. And there was a constant refrain from, especially I think with Sydney, probably worse than any other city in Australia, I think, I could be wrong, there's a sense of the state government governing for Sydney and not for the rest of New South Wales. And to give you an example, one of the area health services in New South Wales, Greater Western, is the size of Germany. And so, you know, these issues are huge, this divide between city and country. So I think living in the Blue Mountains sharpens it a little bit, but it's really more comes from my experience working in state government.
From my experience, at least, I think that almost every state I've been to where I've not lived in the centre of government, money stops at a defined line, I think, in the Northern Territory. It's called the Berrima Line. And I'm not too sure what it's called in South Australia yet, but it's certainly there. It might be Jepp's Cross, I think, in South Australia.
And actually, I might just add something there. I think it's very Australian. I mean, the city-country divide is now a global issue. I think it was just a year or two ago that there was that sort of line that the UN said we crossed, where now a larger proportion of the world's population lives in the city rather than in the country. But this is, I think, one of the biggest differences, say, between Australia and the US. I mean, the US, because of its rich farmlands, you know, has this small town culture, which is huge, you know, like a really big part of their population lives in regional cities, big, important regional cities and towns, and lots of small towns. And it's just not the case in Australia. I think, you know, the divide is much starker, and I think it's one of the things that actually makes my book quite Australian.
Okay, well, that's an interesting segue into my next question, because when I was reading When We Have Wings, I don't recall it being explicitly stated that it was Australia, but it certainly felt Australian to me. There was that disconnect between the bush and the city, and there was a pronounced, even before you get to flyer versus non-flyer, there's a bit of a class distinction happening between haves and have-nots. It's often said when you're talking about speculative fiction or science fiction that you're looking into the near future. And I wanted to ask you, what do you think the near future holds for Australia in that sense, with what you've explored and When We Have Wings?
I'm glad you felt it was Australian. It's you're right that it's not deliberately stated, but you know there are kind of some obvious clues there in terms of the seasons run and the fact that you go north to get warmer and things like that. And I didn't want to compromise on that. And I'm very interested in speculative fiction that's not set in North America or Europe. So I really enjoyed the, you know, The Wind Up Girl by Paolo Bacigalupi, for example. I loved it being set in Bangkok. But to answer your question about Australia, again, even, you know, I guess the environmental issues concern me hugely, and those raise their head a bit in When We Have Wings. It's not really the focus of the book, although, you know, there are a lot of clues in there. And, you know, as I said, having worked on water policy, I'm extremely it seems to be now that we're underwater, but, you know, those are just fluctuations, you know. In terms of our long-term future, I think things like food security are going to become really important. And I feel very concerned that that a lot of our politicians either don't seem to understand what century we're living in, or feel unable to address really current issues because of the kind of corruption of public debate around sensationalist issues. I mean, the idea that someone like the leader of the opposition could, for example, talk as if we don't need the, you know, NBN, you know, things like that, you know, just completely blows me away. I think there are huge challenges for Australia. I think, you know, I'm very concerned about peak oil, for example, and I think that Australia is probably one of the few countries that could survive peak oil, but we're not preparing for it. Obviously, climate change, though, is going to be a huge challenge for us. Oh, and this is another thing I wanted to say about speculative fiction in relation to this question, which is that speculative fiction isn't just looking into the future, important though I think that is. I think one of the things that's so important about it is it's actually saying, look what's happening right now and you're not even noticing.
Yeah, it's a bit concerning. If I can relate it to where I'm living at the moment. We're sort of far enough north that we're still in crop-growing country, but certainly around the outskirts of Adelaide and the last 10 years, we've seen arable land eaten up by housing developments.
Yes.
And there doesn't seem... I'm wondering what we're going to grow our fruits and vegetables on in the next 10 years, because they're planning to come out even further north. So.
Yes. It's a huge issue in Sydney because, you know, really the best agricultural land in the state is right around Sydney, and it's being built on.
Well, yeah, I imagine it's worth quite a bit of money for development, isn't it, rather than for fruit and vegetables.
That's right.
Okay, changing tack a bit, you've got a bit of a background in film.
Yes.
You studied and you worked a bit in the industry. And I wanted to ask how that affected the way you might have imagined and then crafted When We Have Wings.
Virtually everyone that I've spoken to who's read the book has said, oh, you know, this would make a great film. And I think it would, but I have to say that I didn't write it with that way in mind. You know, I didn't sit down thinking, oh, I'm going to write something that's going to be great bait, you know, for a filmmaker. And I think, again, partly it was because, as I say, I did start writing it a long time ago and the special effects, you know, weren't as good as they are now. But my interest in film and my love of film has always, I mean, I'd have to say that my love of writing is a bit older, you know, and deeper in me, but film is very close second. And perhaps what I have learned from working in film and thinking about film is structure. And I think this is, and I'll say something, you know, you're not meant to be critical ever of other writers, and I won't name names, but I think a lot of Australian novelists in particular really struggle with structure, you know, beautiful sentences, and there's sensitive explorations of issues, but they have no idea how to structure a story, many of them, or maybe no interest in, I don't know. And that's really something you can't get away with in film. Structure is incredibly important. And I worked in the editing room, and that's all about structure. And, you know, even a few seconds of film time can make a big difference. And, you know, I feel that way about my book. I mean, it's not a short book, but for me, every sentence in it, you know, matters and can make a difference.
I was just looking at the jacket copy, and you've got a quote from the award-winning director Jane Campion, and you've assisted her on a couple of films.
Yes.
And my next question, which you sort of were touching on in the answer to the previous one, was could you imagine a feature film of When We Have Wings, and assuming that people are going to throw money at you, who would you like to cast?
Wow, that's an interesting question. Who would I like to cast? There's a young Australian actress, and I'm not entirely sure how I pronounce her surname. You'd probably know her, Mia Wasikowska, I think her name is. I'm trying to think what she's been in. We saw her in a television series called In Treatment, which was about a therapist and his patients. And the therapist is played by Gabriel Byrne, who I think would make excellent Zeke, actually. Yeah, so those were the kind of two names that popped into my mind. And I think there are some really excellent directors around who could, you know, really do it justice. But, you know, they tend to be kind of rather large names. So, we just have to see. I mean, there are some directors around who I think can do spectacle and vividness and action, but who also can make you feel, you know, which is clearly critical.
Okay. Well, I advise you to put the wish out on Twitter, because that seems to... Everything I've asked for on Twitter has come true in the last couple of days. So.
Wow. Yeah.
So it could have just been a coincidence, but you never know. You've spent 10 years writing When We Have Wings, drawing obviously on your life experiences, nature and art. To me, the book's the best imagining of human-powered flight that I've come across. What do you think it is about flight that fascinates us?
Well, I certainly think it's constantly used as a metaphor for freedom. And, in fact, I have a bit of a go at that in the book. I really enjoy the speech that my architect, Peter, gives towards the end, where he says, you know, we're tired of having this as a metaphor and, we claim it as a reality. And I must admit, I sometimes feel like every second literary book I see uses wings and flight as a metaphor, and I'm getting a little tired of it. So I wanted the reality. As I've said before, you know, it had a lot to do with, I had many dreams as a child where I was sort of struggling to fly, and I so wanted that freedom. And I know that many, many other people have talked to me about their dreams of flying. And the other interesting thing is that many people have come back to me after reading the book and have said that it inspired dreams in them. I think like actual dreams, you know, when they're asleep, not just daydreams, which is amazing. And I love that. And in my childhood, I grew up partly in the Rocky Mountains, and, you know, there were a lot of hawks and eagles there, and, you know, to see a huge golden eagle launch itself off a cliff in front of you is an incredible experience, but you also feel, you know, really jealous. I really want to do that. And as I was also saying, we have this amazing expansion of technology. So as a kid, I saw my uncle hang gliding in very primitive equipment, and it just keeps going. And people are paragliding. They spend their whole lives trying to get a few seconds of flight. So people are actually doing it. There was a great question that Jane Campion asked me when she read the book. She said, you know, I really enjoyed the book and I had dreams about it and all that. But she said, you know, I don't think I'd actually do it. I don't think I'd go to all that trouble to get wings and fly. And I said, yeah, well, you might not and I might not, but if someone, you know, someone who's 18 or 20 or even 25 would, you know, they would, because they're doing it now, you know, with wings and things like that. People, there was always, you know, people will get in a tin can and fly to the moon. They'll, when I was at the CSIRO tweet up for the launch of the Mars rover, they asked a group of 50 of us if we had the opportunity to fly to Mars and we knew we wouldn't come back, how many of us would do it? And many people in the room put up their hands. So I had a friend of mine who's a bit of an adventurer and explorer and has spent quite a lot of time paragliding and hang gliding. And one of the comments I treasure most is he said to me, you nailed the experience of flying in your book. He said, that is what it feels like.
Well, that's a great compliment, isn't it?
Yes.
To be able to you know, connect with somebody who actually does that for or gets as close to it as possible as they can. Okay, I've seen fans and commentators, and I'm one of those that have called for more of what you've given us in When We Have Wings. Have you said everything you need to say about Perry and Zeke's world?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I have had a few people, as you say, ask about that. I have very definite ideas for my next book, which doesn't involve flying, but I think it will have a lot of the elements that people like about that world, even though the characters won't be the same. But as to whether I'll actually ever revisit those specific characters, I guess we'll see what happens. Maybe the well fills up again. There are certainly things that could still be explored, but I haven't decided yet.
Okay, so that's a maybe.
I guess it depends how many people clamour.
I need to start a campaign, obviously. All right, so taking the question, and this is the last question, a bit away from When We Have Wings, yourself along with Tara Moss, Kirsten Tranter and the blogger Elizabeth Luetti holding a glamorous Stella Prize event in the Blue Mountains, correct?
Yes.
That's to mark International Women's Day?
Yes.
So what I wanted to ask you is, how do you perceive the current state of affairs for women's writing in Australia? And if you held the magic wand, what would you like to see happen?
Wow. Okay. That last part is a difficult one. We haven't got the statistics in the same way that Vida has counted up the statistics again, which still look utterly shocking around attention paid to writing by women in terms of reviewing, etc. I can't imagine they'd be very different in Australia. Yeah. So I feel that, you know, a lot of people have talked about unconscious bias. I definitely think that's there because, you know, there are a lot of women in publishing in who are also gatekeepers in terms of prizes and reviewing. So I think it's a cultural bias issue rather than, although there are, of course, are individual people who are very much part of that. I can't help thinking of, you know, Bob Carr and, that those blind spots are still very strong in individuals. I guess if I could wave a magic wand, I would ask readers to have a look, which, you know, is what this challenge has been doing. And it's just really great to see readers, both men and women, responding and looking, because it is amazing how surprised people are when they look at what they're reading. And I think, you know, that's all we can ask ourselves to do is to say, well, you know, yeah, where are we really coming from? And I think, I've become a lot more aware of this idea that, you know, when a woman writes a novel, say, about family issues or whatever, it's seen in a particular way. And then if a man does it, it's an important examination of contemporary life. So, it's a fairly wishy-washy sort of answer. But I think that it's so deep, our training, and it starts so young that it's going to take a lot of conscious effort to change.
And would you say in that sense probably the Stella Prize is the easiest thing to implement in addressing that?
Look, I think it's just a start, you know, and I think it's really interesting that I think it's just a beginning. I think it's really valuable that someone like Kate Grenville says, well, look, you know, the Orange Prize changed my life, and, you know, definitely something like the Stella Prize could go some way towards helping to spotlight, because that is the problem, is to find, there are good books out there, and the difficulty can be finding them, as we all know. It's just, there's such a weird mix of factors, especially in a small scene like Australia, as to who gets noticed, and it is a lot to do with whether you've been part of the scene, whether you've networked, which, for example, I've only just started doing this year. I mean, I did absolutely nothing, you know, except write in a room. I didn't know any writers. I didn't go to anything because I felt that it wasn't the right thing to do until I'd actually written something.
Okay. No, that's interesting, isn't it? With the size of Australia, you'd think that it wouldn't be that hard to tackle. Mm-hmm. But as you say, it's probably something that's unconscious and in a lot of cases ingrained in us from a very early age. Mm. I just wanted to say it's been an absolute pleasure talking with you. I wish you all the best for the Glamorous Stella Prize event, which is 8th of March.
Yes, that's
in the Blue Mountains.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you, Sean. I've really enjoyed the interview, and it's been great, you know, having such a kind of intelligent support, you know, for the book. I'm really enjoying that.
Thank you for the opportunity, and good luck with that second When We Have Wings book.
Thanks, Sean.